This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In a move that surprised many observers, the Massachusetts State Senate just passed a controversial crackdown on undocumented immigrants. Republican State Senator Bruce Tarr voted yes on the bill.
Plain and simply, if you are here illegally, we are going to do everything we can to prevent you from getting benefits that legal citizens and others who are here legally are entitled to.
Also this week, the Boston Globe Spotlight team exposes alleged corruption in the state's probation department, the actions of a rogue department, says Governor Deval Patrick, to which Probation Department Commissioner Jack O'Brien replies.
Rogue, I mean, I answer the Chief Justice. So, and that's a lot of criticism has been that I'm rogue agency, that the commissioner doesn't respond or answer to anybody. I do. And I hear a lot about nepotism and so forth and so on. Chief Justice Mulligan approved all of those appointments.
And strong reaction to independent gubernatorial candidate Tim Cahill's comments on Governor Patrick's recent meeting with members of the Muslim community. Here's Cahill on NECN with Jim Browdy last night.
He's pandering to people who don't want to look at where the terrorism problem exists, and it exists with some Muslim extremists. And the community itself has to work with law enforcement, not against law enforcement, to try to root them out, or then all Muslims will be held accountable.
Listeners, immigration, probation, gubernatorial gaffation? What's your take on these or any big story from the week? Join us in our Week in Review conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. But first, we're joined by WBUR reporter Bianca Vazquez-Tonez to bring us up to speed on this immigration amendment that passed yesterday in the Senate. Hey there, Bianca.
Hey, Meghna.
So why don't you just describe to us really quickly what was actually in the amendment?
Well, this amendment seeks to tighten laws on nearly all facets of life. It would increase penalties for driving without a license, for example. And it also codifies already existing restrictions. For example, illegal immigrant students have to pay out-of-state tuition at public colleges right now. This amendment proposes to make it illegal for them to get any kind of break in the future on their tuition and by being treated as residents. And probably the most shocking measure for many people is the 24-hour hotline that you mentioned. It would allow people to report people they believe are here working illegally.
So I understand that this amendment, in terms of the terms that you just described, also goes further than any immigration bill proposed in 5 years in Massachusetts. Is that correct?
That's what people say.
Okay. And those people who I presume many of whom are critics of the amendment, immigration advocates mostly, they've accused senators of passing the bill because it's politically expedient. And given that it is an election year, polls seem to show, if I understand correctly, that 84% of Massachusetts residents support limiting access to public benefits for people living here without proper documents. Do you think that the political portion is really what's driving this?
I don't think it can be explained that easily. There are certainly people who voted for this amendment who previously voted to expand benefits for immigrants in the past, immigrants who are here illegally. Some of those people are up for re-election, and some are retiring and don't appear to have anything to gain by voting for this. So it's not really clear, you know, if that's the only thing that's driving this. What is interesting about the amendment is that it's clearly responding to a perception out there that illegal immigrants are getting many benefits and that this is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. The truth is that they're not eligible for many benefits, such as Medicaid and food stamps and things like this. And this amendment tries to make it nearly impossible for people to sneak through the system. But it's not clear how much that's actually happening.
Okay. And we should note that this was an amendment that was passed in the Senate, and a similar one was attempted in the House, the so-called Perry Amendment, a few weeks ago, which did not pass.
Correct.
Do we have a sense? I mean, Governor Patrick has been very cool to these kind of measures in the past, so he's not showing any support for this at the moment.
Well, in fact, his whole sort of platform has been about expanding benefits and assimilation and integration measures for immigrants. So, you know, people expect him to veto this. But again, it's an election year. So,
well, you mentioned a little bit earlier about concerns about fraud and people sneaking through the system without proper documents, and that it's not clear on exactly how much of that is happening. So does the Senate amendment provide a way for officials to really determine how much fraud is going on?
Not directly. And there's actually no additional funding for enforcement to do a lot of things in this amendment. And that's one thing the critics have said, is that this is just another unfunded mandate.
Okay. And we talked about Governor Patrick briefly, but what about other members of Beacon Hill leadership, House Speaker Robert DeLeo or Senate President Therese Murray, their reactions to this?
Well, DeLeo so far has been fairly cool to it. And President Therese Murray actually pretty interestingly has said that she doesn't like everything in it. So it's not clear that she'll actually support it in the end either.
Okay. WBUR reporter Bianca Vazquez-Tonis, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Meghna.
All right. Well, joining us now to talk more about this week's news, including that immigration or undocumented workers amendment, is Renee Loth, columnist for the Boston Globe and former editorial page editor for the Globe. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Renee.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also with us is Ken Cooper. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and former reporter for the Boston Globe, the Washington Post, and others. Ken Cooper, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Megan. Happy to be here.
And listeners, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you want to talk about immigration, about probation, about anything that caught your attention in this week's news in the greater Boston area. Again, that's 1-800-423-8255. Ken Cooper, let me start with you. Just your initial reaction to what seemed to be a rather quick turnaround in the Senate about immigration in the passing of this amendment.
Well, you know, not being a reporter on the story, I can venture more of an opinion here. And I think the reason it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of who voted for it is because ethnic and racial prejudice is not particularly rational to begin with. So it's kind of hard to sort those things out. As I look at the provisions of the law, one of the things that I'm struck by is the great possibility for unintended consequences. They increased the penalties for using fake identifications. Okay, college students who want to drink underage, are you ready for that? Parents in suburbia. There's a provision that says that if police charge somebody who is not doesn't have documented papers as an immigrant, they're supposed to report them to the feds. I'm sure that's going to encourage a lot of witnesses to come forward in certain communities and talk to police about what they've seen. So,
and in some of those communities, there's already a significant tension between law enforcement and the community itself.
Absolutely. And this will make that even worse. So I think, you know, there's a problem. There'll be a problem with law of unintended consequences coming into play here. And also, I think, you know, going to the point about no money for enforcement, it's sort of a repetition of a lot of current law. It sort of makes the public cynical because Beacon Hill is making it seem like they're doing something when really they're making a lot of noise and not really changing a whole lot, perhaps.
Yeah, and there's always that specter, as you mentioned, of the unfunded mandate in a state that's already really strapped for cash. Renee Loth, your initial reactions.
Yeah, you know, I looked into this amendment when it tried to pass the House a couple of weeks ago and wrote a column about it. And, you know, it's certainly satisfying for the state Senate to be able to say that they're cracking down on illegal immigrants. But there are a lot of practical and legal reasons why this amendment is not likely ever to take effect, in my opinion. And, you know, not least being that the federal courts have repeatedly said that immigration is a national, federal matter. It is not a matter for individual states to adjudicate. You know, we can't have 50 individual immigration policies. Not least, there's also a Massachusetts federal court consent decree from 1977 that said that an alien status test, so-called, is unconstitutional in public housing. And this amendment would include public housing as one of the benefits where you'd have to, you know, show me your papers in order to be eligible for the benefits. So I think there's inviting a legal challenge. There are also practical challenges. You mentioned the unfunded mandates. There are many local police who don't want to become immigration agents. That's not what they want to be doing with their time. So, you know, I do think there's some politics behind this. There is that poll that showed people were in favor of it. But, you know, I think when you have a chance to take a look at some of the facts behind the emotions on the immigration debate, you see that it's not as simple as it looks.
Mm-hmm. Well, one Democrat who objected to the proposal was State Senator Cynthia Cream. She talked to NECN recently about the provision that Bianca Vazquez-Tonis talked about with us a little earlier, the one that denies in-state tuition rates to undocumented students. Let's listen.
Talking about in-state tuition, I had a problem. I think that we benefit by educating people. We benefit because they are more productive, obviously, when they have a college education. And I think that we are financially better.
That's the view from State Senator Cynthia Cream. Let's turn to Lexington. David's calling. Welcome to Radio Boston, David.
Thank you, Ms. Chakrabarty. contrary to popular opinion among liberals, and I am a liberal Democrat, immigration is not a victimless crime. According to the National Academy of Sciences, It depressed the wages of the most deprived Americans, high school dropouts, by around 15%. And it also takes jobs from the most deprived American workers. And I would cite Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times on that.
And I suppose some would, sorry, David, but I suppose some would also say that it leads to wage suppression amongst those workers as well.
That's what I said, quoting the National Academy of Sciences. According to Kristof makes a great case that it takes jobs from the most deprived American workers. You can easily get his column by Googling, quote, compassion that hurts, unquote.
So, David, sorry to jump in here, but so do you think that the amendment passed in the Massachusetts State Senate is a step in the right direction then in terms of protecting, as you say, those most deprived American workers?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't looked at it closely. But I think that we definitely need to crack down on illegal immigration. You know, we basically in this country, we have a policy, a de facto policy of enabling mass immigration and illegal immigration. And, you know, it's basically corporate welfare, which is why the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the big business Republicans like it so much.
David, thanks so much for your call. We got to jump into a break here. So Renee Loth, columnist and former editorial page editor for the Boston Globe, and Ken Cooper, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and also formerly with the Globe. Both of you, please do stand by. We'll get a lot more from you after the break. Also, a little later this hour, Henry David Thoreau. We know he was a writer and a naturalist, but how about climatologist? Stick with us to find out what I mean. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about this week's news, but also a little later in the show, we'll focus on the never-ending complexities of love in the workplace. Have you watched your colleagues get involved over PowerPoint? Make sure to call us with your thoughts or questions because we'll be joined by Boston Globe Love Letters columnist Meredith Goldstein. But you can also give us a call right now about this week's news at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Also, find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And we're joined again by Renee Loth. She's columnist and former editorial page editor for the Boston Globe. And Ken Cooper, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, formerly of the Globe, formerly of the Washington Post, Knight Ridder, St. Louis American, and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You are truly a reporter for all seasons, Ken. It's good to have you.
Just couldn't keep a job, that's all.
It's good to have you both here. Let's turn to what is one of the biggest stories of the week, the scandal at the Massachusetts Probation Department, and then the subsequent suspension of Probation Department Commissioner Jack O'Brien. The Boston Globe Spotlight team over the weekend, of course, exposed all manner of alleged patronage and hiring practices and what have you, pay to play that supposedly is running rampant through that department. It got a lot of reaction from folks, including R. Peter Anderson. He's a retired Massachusetts District Court judge. Here's what he had to say.
When I first became a judge in 1990, I think the Massachusetts probation system was regarded as a national model. We've slipped considerably since under the leadership of Jack O'Brien, or lack of leadership.
So, Renee Loth, a big story here. What's your take on what's happened since then?
Well, you know, not to promote myself too much, but this is the topic of my column tomorrow in the Boston Globe. You know, and what Judge Anderson had to say just then is sort of my point, that of course these are outrageous allegations. If true, they pervade this important agency with cronyism and patronage and nepotism, and Director O'Brien is said to be running this place like a private, you know, potentate. But I think that's something that's lost in all of this understandable outrage is the actual program, the actual probation program, which is a crucial part of the criminal justice system. You have to have a functioning professional probation program because it touches the lives of tens of thousands of individuals who are trying to get their lives back on track. And all over the country, states are giving their probation departments more responsibility as an effort to try to, you know, divert people from going to prison and cut back on prison overcrowding and the costs associated with, you know, sending so many people to prison. And it's a little unclear whether this probation department under this current leadership is can be trusted to take on this extra responsibility. And so it really, there's a whole public policy, public safety aspect to the story as well that I examine tomorrow.
And Ken Cooper, so where does this leave us given these big issues that public safety, et cetera, and also now it seems like political issues in what is looking to be almost a three-way battle between Governor Patrick, Senate President Therese Murray, and House Speaker Robert DeLeo, who all have their own individual solutions for the problem of the probation department?
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of agreement there, although I would come down to basically that a probation department belongs under the purview of the courts. You would not want, with all due respect to the governor, you would not want any tension or conflict between the executive and the judiciary to play out in tussles over control and the performance of a probation department. And I think the bottom line is it needs to be better supervised, more tightly controlled by the judiciary. The other thing I would like to say about this is that it reminded me of the Beacon Hill and City Hall of 30, 40 years ago where everything was patronage, including how to get hired as a Boston school teacher. And there's one implication to this as public policy that hasn't been discussed a lot, as employment policy, is that when you have these kinds of systems of patronage and nepotism, those who are in control, who are most often white, hire their friends who are most often white. And one impact, one crucial impact in a city that's majority-minority these days is that people of color don't get hired. And in fact, you could argue these systems on their face discriminate against people of color because of the way they operate. And I think not enough attention has been paid to that. You could also associate that with the disproportionate percentage of the clientele of the promotion department. It's people of color because that's who's predominantly in the system. The levels of trust may be better if you have a diverse mix of probation officers, which is important in trying to guide people, particularly young people, into productive lives and away from lives of crime. So as employment policy, it fails. As public policy, it fails in terms of providing the services that we need to protect us.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a couple calls here. Yolette's calling from Randolph. Welcome to Radio Boston, Yolette.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'd just like to say that I'm a teacher who teaches children from countries from all over the world, and I've always loved Massachusetts because it is a welcoming state, a humane state that embraces differences. And so this amendment by the legislature really saddens me. I don't recognize my state anymore.
Yolette, thanks for your call. Let's turn to Orange. Brian's on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston, Brian.
Hi. I'd just like to say I worked for years trying to help sign people up for MassHealth benefits. And a number of years ago, there was a federal policy that came in that forced everyone on the books to prove their citizenship or identity. And in a time that many, it was targeted at finding undocumented people, but the burden that it really placed was on poor people having to pay to go get a birth certificate or to get a copy of an ID. And that's where these unintended consequences really play out.
Requiring people to have some form of documentation. Brian, thank you so much for your call. I mean, obviously, this immigration issue has a lot of people's attention. And as both of you said, regarding how Beacon Hill operates and other Massachusetts state departments and those the follow-on effects of actions that we see in our state government. And amongst all this, we have a gubernatorial race that's currently going on as well. And there's been some motion there, particularly with independent gubernatorial candidate Tim Cahill, because he's caused a little bit of controversy this week. He called Governor Deval Patrick weak on terrorism and criticized the governor's meeting last week with members of the Muslim community. Cahill called the meeting, quote, political correctness run amok. And that, of course, caused some outrage in the Muslim community. They replied, calling Cahill's statement bigoted. Tahir Ali, he's a spokesman for the Worcester area Muslims.
How many Muslims has he met with? Has he talked to them? Some of his doctors could be Muslim. Some of his teachers could be Muslim. Some of his kids, babysitters could be Muslim. Does he know that we are part of the same mosaic as everybody else is?
Let's take a quick call on this issue. Tariq's calling from Medford. Welcome to Radio Boston, Tariq.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to tell you, if we follow the logic of Tim Cahill, then we need to arrest every Catholic priest as a child molester. I mean, this is ridiculous. There are over a billion Muslims worldwide, and you get these one or two nuts out there. I don't know, Tim Cahill is just trying to get headlines here. He doesn't make sense. And as an independent, I mean, he's already behind, what, double digits behind the governor? We're going to, I know I personally am an independent, and I'm going to work very hard that Tim Cahill does not get elected.
Tariq, thank you so much for your call. Ken Cooper, let me turn this to you. The governor's race seems to be actually lurching in all different directions from week to week now. So what do you make of Treasurer Cahill's latest move here?
Well, the one thing that seems to be pretty unchanging about the governor's race is that Tim Cahill is behind, and perhaps further and further behind, which might explain why he comes out with a statement that is clearly prejudiced in its thinking. And I think the caller's point is right. You know, a few of a group do something, so therefore you associate that characteristic with the whole group. That's the way prejudice thinking, if we can call it that, actually works. And I think, you know, he accuses the governor of pandering to special interests. You know, I thought the governor was appealing to citizens of the Commonwealth and appealing to a sense of tolerance, one of our higher values, and appealing to our sense of common interest as citizens of the Commonwealth.
Yeah, there are times where it seems like that phrase, pandering to special interests, if you remove the attribution, it could have come from almost any candidate these days. Renee Law.
I think that Tim Cahill is trying to change the subject. I mean, he had a very bad week where he was quoted repeatedly as saying, you know, that this scandal in the probation department shouldn't raise any eyebrows because, hey, it's Massachusetts and, you know, this is, you know, patronage happens. And I think that he's gotten a lot of pushback on that. And he's trying to change the subject to something even more incendiary so that he can, you know, get back on his message, whatever that might be.
Well, if I may, we should change the subject a little bit here on Radio Boston right now and go to what we're calling our Friday hubbub. It's one story from the week that maybe wasn't front page news but caught your attention anyway. So, Renee, your Friday hubbub.
Well, it has to do with State Treasurer Tim Cahill, actually, although not directly to what we've been speaking about. This hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but Cahill has been going all over the state handing out multi-million dollar checks to communities through his School Building Assistance Fund, which is part of the Treasurer's Office. You know, million dollar checks, multi-million dollar checks. And, you know, you can't begrudge him for using the power of the incumbency in his office to curry favor in an election year. But as a candidate for governor, Cahill is also in favor of rolling back the sales tax and the new tax on alcohol, which is what funds the school building assistance program. So, you know, is it hypocrisy or is it just a clash of competing interests? The listeners will have to decide.
Ken Cooper, your hubbub.
Mine's a little further away. Down in Jamaica this week, there's been a pretty nasty situation where the Jamaican police have gone en masse into a neighborhood to try to capture an alleged drug kingpin who is wanted in New York City by our authorities because his network reaches into this country, so-called. What's interesting about this is that he has been protected by a gang that's tied to the current ruling political party. We might call it the Tory Party. At least that's what it used to be. This falls in the category of careful who you give guns to, because back in the 1970s, the United States armed the predecessors of this gang because they wanted to remove from power one Michael Manley, who was a social democrat who had friendly relations with Cuba, and Cuba was doing things like sending doctors to Jamaica and building schools in Jamaica, and we wanted to get him out of office. And we gave guns to his opponents, and those guns are protecting the wanted criminal that we're trying to bring back to the United States right now.
You'd think that there are a number of other locations around the world where the careful who you give guns to lesson is one we might have already learned. My hubbub is a little lighter, and I should remind everyone that links to all of these stories will be on our website, wbur.org/Boston. A little later this afternoon, click on Hubbub. That is our blog. So again, mine is a little lighter, but it comes from the New England Aquarium and in the form of a 200-pound harbor seal.
First thing we can try is some bubbles with her. Smoky. Bubbles?
That smoke. She's the 200-pound harbor seal who just celebrated her 39th birthday, and she enjoyed her birthday by blowing her nose to blow out, or I should say, using her nose to blow out candles stuffed in the mouths of herring. So happy birthday, Smoke. You don't look a day over, you know, however old a seal looks at the age of 39. Renee Loth, columnist and former editorial page editor for the Boston Globe, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And Ken Cooper, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, formerly of the Globe as well. Real pleasure to have you on Radio Boston.
Thank you, Megan. Glad to be here.